This 1UP podcast is brought to you by G4, your way to get inside the year's biggest gaming event. G4 will be on the convention floor live every day with exclusive hands-on demos of over 30 of the biggest new gaming titles. E3-08 Live, week-long coverage, July 14th through the 18th, only on G4. Visit g4tv.com/E3 for details.
Hello and welcome to GFW Radio. We are podcasting from E3. This is the last day of E3. We got like an hour till we get the hell out of here and go back to San Francisco. I guess Ryan Scott's already on his way. Dipshit missed the last podcast here now, so he's fired. I just did it on air. You guys know before he does. Been nice working with you, Ryan. We got Mark Noseworthy here from Relic Entertainment. You are producer.
Yeah, of, producer on Dawn of War 2.
Dawn of War 2. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We also have Sean Elliott.
Hello.
And Terry Nguyen.
Hail and well met.
Scooter. Hi. So here we are at the show.
Wow.
How's it going, Mark?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. It's been a long couple days, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, talking about game you've been making for two years and that you really like playing is pretty easy, so... it's probably easier than the guys back at work in the office right now. So,
yeah, they're probably jealous of you.
That's different from what I just saw. I just got done seeing Postal 3, and I don't want to rip on too much, but it's like a good way to also use. I mean, you know, how's the show? Is kind of like how's the weather when you're at E3? So, I mean, I do want to ask you that just because I'm curious. But also, I had someone ask me this. A guy from, you know, the marketing guru from Postal. It's like, how's the show? And then before I could answer. He didn't really care what I thought. He was just like, this show fucking sucks. And he, like, looks around. There's, like, you know, no one, you know, it's the final day. It's wrapping up. There's a few people as is, you know, just, you know, select press and stuff. And he looks around down in the showcase pavilion, and there's, you know, a lot of these empty kiosks. And he's like, yeah, it fucking sucks. He's like, it's a waste of money. And I was like, well, you know, what's the deal? Like, you don't have enough, you don't feel like you have enough eyes on your product or whatever. And he's like, oh, I'm fine right here. I'm fine right here. He's like, but these big companies spending all this money. I was like, okay, this is an interesting way to get going on this game. And then so the next thing, he's like doing this demo, and I see him, he's got a vacuum cleaner. I mean, and you know what, you're familiar, Mark, with Postal, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
And it's a highbrow humor. So he's got a vacuum cleaner, and he's going around through this porno shop sucking up cum rags.
And, oh, God.
Just way to get into it.
This is a new weapon in this game, and you then shoot them. You know, you switch the polarity or something on the vacuum cleaner, and then
you shoot the
rags. And you just do that for a while, and this is your job. You're basically the cleanup boy in the shop. But then these fat soccer moms come in, and they're protesting. But instead of standing around outside, they're going all through the porno shop protesting. So you're supposed to shoot them with the cum rags, and as you do so, you're supposed to meet your max allotment of 6 soccer moms pwned. You know, it's like PW.
Yeah.
And we're
uh-huh.
And so, you know, we're doing that. And then the next thing I hear, the guy's like, this fucking engine sucks. And I was like, wait a minute.
The guy making the game said that?
I don't know if he's making it. He's like the
marketing guru or someone else.
The marketing guru, yeah. I don't have his card on me. Skip and I were trying to figure out what it was. It was like something Jewish, like marketing Moyle. What's that?
Moyle?
You know, Moyle, the circumcision guy. The guy who just... Oh.
That's what his business card says?
So maybe this is the case. If, like, the marketing itself is the foreskin, he's cutting off the marketing.
Yeah. We're already giving them more press than they deserve. They love mm-hmm. this stuff.
Vanessa, THQ PR person's over there afraid.
Like, please talk about my game.
About. So I'm talking I'll about this horrible this, but porno game. It was interesting game. Like, to hear him say this. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I like the engine. I was like, well, what engine is it? And he's like, it's Source. But then he was kind of complaining because... In the previous Postal game, I guess they had some serious issues with Unreal Engine at the time, whatever iteration it was, you know, that they were using. It didn't work out, and he was like, "Yeah, we, you know, it's not the it wasn't the best for open world." And we kind of made the mistake again. Source isn't the best for open world. And he's like, "But it's cheap and it's easy to use." You know, it's like we can't afford Unreal 3, and this is a pretty surreal demo.
Yeah, it's weird. Man.
It does.
Airing some dirty laundry.
Then the next thing, yeah, he's like setting dogs on fire. Like the next mission is you go to this like.
Do they still have the cat silencer thing? They're always proud of how like putting a cat in a gun turns into a silencer.
You had a monkey appeared on his back. He's like, we have a lot of things with animals because he goes in to see this like Cesar Millan type spoof guy, and you're supposed to be training a dog with a laser pointer so that you can get it to attack people later on. But then he's, you know, like he gets bored of training the dog, so he.
What?
No, he's talking
Scooter's
about laser
whispering to me on air as if we're not on air. It's like whispering. Yeah. You're on a microphone.
Actually, I realized you did. But I'm thinking about your stupid bat signal thing.
Oh, I got it right here.
Fuck.
Got my Batman pen.
Sorry, when he said laser pointer, it just made me think of Jeff distracting people with a stupid bat signal. True.
So you're supposed to train this dog with the laser pointer, and he gets bored of that, so he pours gas on it, burns it to death, and then this monkey, he's like, we got a lot of animals, and the monkey appears on his back, and he's like, so what's this? He's like, I don't know, it just, you know, it just kind of got put in a couple days ago, and this was like another mystery. I mean, I guess if he's a marketing moyle, then it's like, he's not designing it, but he's like, well, you know, so I said, is this how this game is being designed? You just come up with an idea and just throw it in, you know, and things just appear. And he's like, well, we got a design document, but I don't know. And he said something about Moscow. Well, that's where part of the game is being made and somewhere else. But so he's like, I do know that the monkey, you can command it to, pardon me for this, Vanessa, but you can make it fuck people in their face and throw feces on them. And the whole time we were sitting there, we were like, I was laughing, and I felt bad. Skip was with me, and I was like, I hope Skip doesn't think I'm laughing because I think this is quality humor. I'm laughing just at like how I kept tripping on stuff, like when he's like, we got a design document. Like, this engine sucks. Like, somewhere in Moscow. That was all the stuff that I was still laughing about, but it might have looked, if you were just passing by, as though I were laughing at the idea of shooting this stuff at people. And then there was like a guy and a woman there, and they were looking, and the guy just kept laughing and looking at the woman to see if she was laughing along with him, and she was just like stone-faced the whole time.
Mortified, probably.
Yeah.
Sad thing is, it's probably going to... It'll find a market, right? Like,
I don't know if these games do find a market, do they?
Well, it depends on the cost. They find a market enough to make three of them.
You know, it's all about, you know, if you can do it cheap enough, everything can be profitable, right?
Right. Well, I'm glad that Relic has taken kind of a higher stance, content-wise.
Yeah. There's certainly no cum rags in Dawn of War 2.
Wow. I did say
I'm pretty sure Games Workshop
that might be
wouldn't approve
of
that.
The show.
You do have something.
There's a gaff thread title right there.
You do have something
confirmed.
No
cum rags in Honor Wars.
You got something that's not unlike the pizza thrower in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, though. That's the sorry for the joke. That's the orc battle wagon or something. Yeah, I had to fess up to it. That was the one thing I was like poking fun at. Because, you know, I was saying, like, if you're a Company of Heroes fan, you're exactly the sort of person who's like, I'm cool. Of course I'm cool with the Sherman. It's a real tank. And then other people are like, what's all this? It's just World War II stuff. And those are the ones that like the battle wagon. And then I'm the group that's like, didn't I see that in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
You know, it's the orcs, though. All their things are, like, goofy like that. For the Company of Heroes person, that's what the Imperial Guard equipment is for. Like the actual Sherman looking tank, except it's got like, you know, like more guns and blades on it, like the Bane blade or something.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you guys because when we podcasted the first day, we had all just seen Dawn of War 2, and one thing that I noticed, and you can tell me if my perception is off or not, but I felt like Dawn of War 1. And the expansions, like, sort of pushed the kind of cartoony aspect of the art design a little more. Like the especially like the orcs are particularly goofy. And in what we saw of Dawn of War 2, it looked like almost more quote unquote realistic or a little grittier or darker.
Yeah, we are going for a more realistic look with the art direction. Like the Essence Engine you saw in Company Heroes, like it was built to recreate World War II, right? So everything was really high fidelity, and it just made sense for us to pull it in that direction. It also just differentiates us from our competition, which is more, you know, more cartoony and more childlike. And, you know, it's a mature-rated RTS, so we want it to look mature. So, and, you know, in the grim, dark future, there is only war. Mm-hmm. So it's supposed to be pretty serious. But the orcs still, we do think they add that humor element. You know, they're pretty cool and they're funny and, mm-hmm. You know,
they still use Z's in a lot of their unit names.
Yeah, totally.
They're that kind of race.
And their animations are way more over the top, you know, like some of their sync kills. And, you know, like one of the stick bombers, he's got a really cool stick sync kill because he'll pull a stick bomb off the back of his chest and rub it across.
Sorry.
And light it up on the enemy's chest and then jumps up and throws it down. And then the explosion will go off and he'll flip backwards. And it looks awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was... like it surprised me, not in a bad way, but just because I was used to this series having, you know, a more cartoony look.
Yeah, you know, it was a choice we made on purpose.
I was pointing out to you though, if you look at
you look at the literature for the Warhammer universe. Yeah.
It's totally violent, you know? I mean, those books that they would send us now and then, I mean, it's like grotesque stuff, you know? Like guys with like pus, chaos warriors with like maggots and pus coming out of them and stuff. And it's like, it's always been that mix of like the pizza thrower and just like utter destruction.
Yeah, no one is laughing or telling jokes in the entire universe. You know, it's just the constant horrors of war. Right? Like,
is it right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, you read from that big book.
I did.
There was like some enormous Bible of like Warhammer 40, not 40,000, but the original Warhammer stuff, and it was pretty heavy duty.
Uh huh.
It was like dipping into. No, Life book series on.
Is that the Bible that specifies that like orcs are technically mushrooms?
What?
I didn't read that far into it, man.
It's apparently, I think that it might apply to the 40K, but supposedly orcs are literally space mushrooms, like that they grow intelligent somehow. Oh, look, see, he's confirming it. Like,
well, really, we're getting a nod from Mark.
I can't totally confirm, but I've heard, like, I'm not as up on the lore as some of the guys, but you know, I don't want to say anything I shouldn't, but
It might be a safe assumption to make, but yeah, supposedly because they're supposed to be kind of analogous, you know, even though they're
orcs. Grow out of the ground and stuff, you know.
But yeah, there's basically like orcs are literally just mushrooms that like.
So they're fungus?
Yeah, they're fungi. They're just like intelligent
fungi.
Multiply on
their own, yeah.
This is like frighteningly close to this discussion that we're having because in an IGN review for Hail to the Chimp, the intro.
Oh, God, the squid!
The intro said that it's got like, you know, whatever, all these creatures, all these animals, including a squid. And then parenthetically, it's like, but a squid's not even an animal technically. And then the great thing was that it's an octopus in the game. But then, of course, that thing hanging there, that a squid's not an animal. So we were all joking, like, what is it? Like, you know, fungi? What? I mean, sorry, that didn't have much to do with it, but it brought us back to animals and fungus. And it actually did. We're debating whether or not orcs are people. Or
I
orcs
swear,
are.
Actually, the Warhammer Online guys confirm, at least from the Warhammer Fantasy universe, that orcs are mushrooms that grew intelligent and multiplied on their own.
That changes my whole worldview.
We can double check some other time to not waste Mark's time in figuring out whether space orcs are fungi also.
So are you guys playing Warhammer at your office? I mean, like the tabletop game?
Oh, yeah, every day. There's like...
Seriously?
Tons of hardcore fans, and I'd say even more in the last couple of months have started getting into it. Like, there's a campaign going on right now. We've got two rooms that people have, you know, their map all set up, and it's all being tracked online because, you know, there's software for this, open source software people can use. And
you
know,
you get to paint your own figurines?
Yeah, some of the guys do. Well, I guess in North America, it's sort of okay to play without painted figurines, but like, I think especially in Europe, it's like totally uncool to field an army that isn't painted, right? Like,
really? If you went into a store with unpainted figurines,
you can't play. Like
no French army shoes, no service.
Yeah. Get your unpainted figurines out of here, you pig.
I was thinking, like, you know, the whole thing is, you know, you want people to care about the tiny units that they're commanding, and it's like, in a way, like, painting it is their solution. I mean, if you spend all this time painting a figure, then you're going to care about it to some degree. I don't know.
Sure.
That's cockamamie, but...
Right.
Yeah, no, the ownership in the tabletop, painting your figurines is really similar to what we're trying to do in Dawn of War 2. It's just really ramp up your attachment to these guys because, you know, you can customize their weapons, their armor, their accessories.
Can we
paint them? And even their talents and abilities. The army painter has been a feature of Dawn of War.
Oh, that's
the original, and won't go into too many details on it, but we'll certainly have something similar in Dawn of War 2.
Cool. So what... How's the show? Like, let's get back to that. I mean, how's the show for you so far?
I think, well, the show's been awesome for Dawn of War. I think everyone's really liking what they're seeing. You know, you've got the hardcore RTS fans that know exactly what we're talking about, and then we explain why we're doing the things we're doing. They're like, wow, that's really cool. I really want to play that. And then we've got a lot of other guys that are like, wow, I kind of stopped playing RTS. You know, I haven't played since, like, StarCraft, blah, blah, blah. Genre doesn't really interest me. And then by the end of our demo, they're like, wow, I'd play your game. So, so that's really good. In terms of the new format, I think this is way better than the nonsense and shenanigans we had in years past.
Like, interesting.
It's
definitely like a 50-50
that's
thing.
Two,
I'm getting.
That's me and you now.
Well, I think there's it's all about the games, right? So when I demoed to you guys, we sat down, you could hear what I was saying, you could hear the music, you could hear the unit responses in the game, you knew what was going on. You're understanding what the experience was, you know, and we didn't have like strippers and people burning their nipples and stuff like 10 feet away, right? Like there was, you know, like it was crazy.
Well, Scooter was, but that was unrelated.
Those Korean booths
Scooter
and stuff,
was
like it was crazy in the past. You know, fire breathers and all sorts of nonsense. And like, what does that have to do with video games?
Well, a lot of people seem to miss that. Yes. I think in many cases, the very ones who complained about it when it was here miss it. And I think that's what I got from the postal guy was, like, when he looked around, what he meant to indicate was, like, there's just games. Like, where's, like...
I think some of it's just, like, industry ego. We're like, well, we're not a big deal anymore because we don't have, like, you know, fire breathers and all sorts of tomfoolery and nonsense that's getting weird television stations to come record it, and 50 Cent's not coming to promote his game anymore. And, like, but that's who cares about that stuff, right? Like, is that really going to...
I think that's
get more attention for Donald
Ward.
And I think it's mostly ego. Now,
obviously,
if you know, having USA Today come down to the booth and interview people is really good, right? And if we're not getting that, then that sucks. And then, you know, we need to do better PR, right? But I think, you know, the focus on games and getting more information out to consumers about what these games are about and what they should be looking forward to, the format is way better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was at a big booth yesterday, and I don't want to say the company's name, but they were, like, all looked, like, to a person, like, bummed. They were sitting there like they were all in, like, a dentist waiting room. You know, there was, like, hardly anybody in there, and I was like, so are you guys not happy with the show? Kind of an obvious question because they just looked miserable. And they said, yeah, no, this sucks for us. And I asked them why, and there were actually people in there looking at games, like, you know, actual game journalist-type people, and they said that what they missed the most was, I mean, they admitted it, that it was an ego thing, that they missed the attention of, like, the hordes of people just, like, crowded around. Like, it just made them feel better to have these people who weren't really going to give them anything. But they just liked having the gawkers. They liked the noise. They liked the
spectacle. It was just a circus. You know, like, I've done, I don't know, maybe 30 demos in the last 2 days, and every single one was with someone that actually mattered and was going to talk to thousands of people in one way or another, right? Yeah. So really significant. But a couple years ago, I remember demoing these guys on the floor. And they look kind of young, but I wasn't going to discriminate or anything. So I'm talking about 15 minutes. And I said, so who are you guys with? And they're like, you know, our high school newspaper. And I was just like, oh, God. You know, like, what has this come to? Like, you know? And it was cool. They liked the game. But, like, that's not what the, you know, you don't have these conventions for that purpose. You know, you don't, you know, this is about selling product.
Why, though, do you think we, I mean, that still for me doesn't answer necessarily why we have the convention. Because, I mean, from your point of view, yes, that means you're getting people to look at your game, but it also means I still think you're getting a fairly shallow look. Maybe it's better than, like, if we nudge in shoulder to shoulder with 50 other people, we have a bit of enough of an attention span to pay attention for 5 minutes, and then we're not distracted and turned to look at another game. It's still much different than, say, if, like, you know, Jeff came up to your studio, spent an afternoon there, came back, you know, like, did multiple interviews with the team, came back and was able to write on it and develop a full...
Yeah, obviously, you get better coverage that way, but it's about economies of scale, right? And you got the buyers and sellers, and this is a way for them all to meet in one place, right? So
yeah, on your end, I mean, what are you getting from having everyone meet in...
Well, instead of coordinating 50 different press events at Relic, right, we just have, you know, a couch and a TV where we sit there for 3 days, and you guys show up, and I think it works really well from our perspective.
Right.
Where, you know, you guys work all day long, see all these games, and... You know, you probably get pretty tired of seeing, and then all night you just type reports and stuff, and you're writing, you know, editorials, and, like, so it's rough on you guys. It's worse than it is for us.
And this, I mean, Sean, I mean, I know you agree that, like, this is much easier for us, too, for that very reason. That, like, even if, which I agree with you, like, the coverage, if, you know, if we have a half hour demo here, that's much shallower, obviously, than going and spending a day at the studio. It's still, like, infinitely better than it used to be at E3 here, where we might have these same things going on, but there were 800,000 people and noises and impossible to hear.
I think we all get different things out of it. I mean, I like being able to get a quick survey of the entire land, you know, and see, like, these are all the things that are going on this year, and then I could step away from it and look for patterns and stuff. I mean, I know it's not GDC, but I was kind of curious, like, if on the development side, I mean, if there's any networking despite it, or just, you know, scouting the competition and, you know, reporting back.
Yeah,
about,
I do miss that. Like, I used to like to walk around for a couple hours and see, oh, that game got announced, or 50 people are standing out line outside of this theater to find out about this game. Well, that must be a big deal. So I do miss that. Like, the pavilion they have this year is okay, but you kind of walk around and you're not even really encouraged to play the games. It's so close and, you know, everything's really cramped. But I do miss that. Like, that was really nice. But, you know, that's what the internet's for. That's what 1UP's for, right? Like, I get home tonight, I'm going to go online, bam, start surfing, go to game trailers and start watching it, right? So I found even when you had the big short floor, the lineups were so stupid and It takes a long time to get into a game too. So I almost didn't play anyways. I was just watching anyway. So I can get just as much from trailers, I think.
You're demonstrating your game like behind closed doors in a room. You know, I mean, the pavilion we're talking about is the closest thing to the old format of E3, where there's just a ton of kiosks that you can go and play. And we're saying that, like, I mean, that format is really, you know, slanted toward pick up and play games. Mm-hmm. You know, I was telling you, like, right before we taped, and I kind of wanted to bring it back up. Like, on one side of the aisle is, you know, our Wii games that you can just pick up, wag the controller around, smile for a couple of minutes, and put down. And then right next to it, I was trying to play Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway, which I'm totally a fan of the series. I love it. Again, it's more World War II, which is exactly what I want, provided it's done well. I really admire some of the things they've done with that series. But I go to pick it up there, and it's like, I mean, like, shit, am I ready for this? Like, do I really want to, like, sit and try to focus on this game standing right here right now and then, and, you know, hearing all these sounds next door? And it's like, I mean, you were making an analogy of, like, what if movies were demonstrated this way?
Yeah, and you walk into a room, there's 30 screens and everything's blasting, and you see an explosion on one screen, and you're like, oh, I'm going to watch this. And then a girl starts taking her top off on another, and you're, oh, I'm going over here. Like, what, you know, it's not a good way to, you know, get a glimpse of entertainment, right?
That's sounds like a good time, but.
Yeah. Sensory overload.
Put it together and it runs into one movie in your mind, you know? It's like, kind of that way with the games. Did you guys see anything else this morning?
Well, I saw Dragon Age over at BioWare,
which they weren't even on before. They were like in their own hotel.
Yeah, they had their own
outside and everything.
They had their own hotel room, and I thought it looked great. So, and I thought the you know, was it on one of yours, or I forget where you know, people were talking about, it just looks like Lord of the Rings. You know, that's the kind of comment you make when you've seen the game for like 2 seconds and you haven't actually seen it or, you know, given it a chance. So, you know, yes, the one cutscene they showed looks a little bit like Helm's Deep, but then they show a lot more that doesn't look anything like that. And in fact, that was just a cutscene. You know, that when they actually went down and showed the gameplay and showed the combat, I was really happy because it really did look like exactly what they're talking about, like a quote-unquote spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate, but like for 2008. So you can go all the way back out to that isometric perspective, and pause the combat and do it just like Baldur's Gate 2. But then on the other hand, you know, the engine and, you know, is now powerful enough that you can zoom all the way back in and play it over the shoulder like Mass Effect or KOTOR.
Yeah.
So
that initial impression, though, I mean, at least if you buy Malcolm Gladwell's theory in the book Blink, it's pretty important. I mean, might be all someone sees,
right? You know, but it's an initial impression of just like the trailer they show.
Of course, that doesn't, right. Yeah, that doesn't mean it's any less superficial, but it also means it's no less important, at least as far as it's, you know, persuasive power for an audience. You know,
well, you could question BioWare or EA's decision to have that be the first thing they show ever of Dragon Age is a scene that looks like it's totally ripped off from the Helm's Deep scene in Two Towers. You could say, well, maybe you shouldn't have done that because people are going to think you ripped off Lord of the Rings. In fact, I saw the demo this morning with like four other guys, and as soon as the lights went on from the demo, you know, the first question was, so did this start out as a Lord of the Rings game with EA, and then like you lost the license and just decided to do this? So that was the very first question. Wow, it's like, no, you fucking dumb shit. It's BioWare.
It's like on the level of Germans asking, like, so now that this is Quake 3, does that mean it comes on 3 discs? It's like, what? Excuse me? I honestly heard that once. I'm like,
you did not.
Yes.
Really? There's been some dumb questions. What about you on your end of things, Mark? I mean, what's the stupid? Well, you know, without, you know, you're not naming names, but.
Give us a dumb question.
Yeah, what's the dumbest thing you've.
It could have been our questions, too. What's the stupidest question someone asked?
Oh, geez. Someone asked me this yesterday, and I was trying to think, like, about the game. We mostly received pretty good questions. It's just, we get the same questions, right? Like, everyone's asking us, like, what's multiplayer all about? Well, we're going to talk about multiplayer later, you know? What about the Tyranids? And I'm like, what about them? You know?
That's a pretty good reply. What about?
Yeah. But, stupidest question.
Just something where, like, after you go, can you believe that guy asked that when you guys are, like, talking amongst yourself?
After that, even while you're still to distract you, while you're still thinking of an answer for that, like, what's the best kind of question that you're unable to answer? I mean, obviously you're unable to answer a whole lot because of the way that, you know, marketing plans go for games.
What's the best question that I'm unable to answer so that I can not answer it?
Well, I mean, yeah, just some. I mean, it, to give an indication of what you really want to talk about, and I mean, you will at some point in the future, obviously, but you can't now. So
yeah, you know, we'd love to talk about multiplayer and you know, the playable races in the game. Yeah, but the thing is, there's only so much information people can take at once, right? If you just like blow your load and just talk about everything, nope, the message gets completely lost, and they have no idea what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. And we're doing a lot of stuff in Dawn of War too, so we need to like slowly, you know, release information over time so that we can build, you know, build up anticipation, but also not overwhelm people with too much information.
Asking, that's another way of covering our ass, because you know there's going to be someone that's listening and be like, you got someone on from Dawn of War and you didn't ask him about multiplayer and you didn't ask him about
you
the
didn't ask
because all
the
those
tyranids.
Questions that you know, right? Those are the ones that.
So what's up with the Tyranids?
Yeah,
what's up with them?
You know, one question. You know, we have had a lot of people asking us about multiplayer this week, obviously, and say, well, we're going to talk about it a bit later. But the one thing we can say, and you guys have probably heard about this, is that Dawn of War 2 is going to be Games for Windows Live title with, you know, fully free multiplayer across the board. So achievements, leaderboards, voice chat. Everything, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. Can't believe I just said kit and caboodle.
That might be a first on this podcast.
Yeah, totally. So it's fully free multiplayer. So, and, you know, your current gamer tag that you're using, you'll be using in Dawn of War 2, and your achievements are going to build up, and, you know, you'll be talking to your buddies who are playing Halo 3, and you'll send them an invite, and they'll come and play it. And I think it's just awesome to be joining that huge multiplayer community, and we're really excited about that. And so,
is it that huge of a community, though, on PC?
Well, it's a, you know, I don't really believe there are PC gamers, you know, who just play PC games, right? I think there's a huge overlap. And I think, you know, hopefully with games like Dawn of War 2 being on, you know, exclusively on PC and using Games for Windows Live, you're going to see a lot more people who are, you know, PC gamers on Games for Windows Live.
Was that a difficult agreement to come to? I mean, because some developers I've spoken to, it seems like they want to distance themselves from it because they associate bad press with it. Other times it seems naturally attractive to you know, affiliate yourself with Microsoft because you're going to...
Yeah, you know, like we're certainly aware of the bad press it's received in the past, but we think with all that press was because there was this gold-silver split, right? Mm-hmm. And there were the haves and the have-nots, and it was, people weren't used to that on PC gaming. You know, all I can say is that Dawn of War 2, it's going to be free. So I think the publicity for us is going to be good because we're going to have, you know, extremely stable connections. Players are going to be able to match well. You know, it's going to scale super well to, like, you know, if we get millions of people playing online, it's going to work, right? You know, and that's awesome.
I mean, you know, you're not going to, I don't know, maybe you will cop to it. I mean, clearly there's some online, you know, connectivity issues with whatever the solution is for Company Heroes.
Yeah, you know.
Is that a way around that?
Yeah, like we've you know, Relic Online is really important to us, and we're going to continue to support it with, you know, Company of Heroes and, you know, Opposing Fronts, and then any other content that we release in the future. But with Dawn of War 2, we wanted to come up with a solution that would connect us to a really large community of gamers, you know, millions of gamers, and Games for Windows Live was the best way to do that.
All right, so are you going to be, I mean, you mean Dawn of War 2, the sort of the poster child for the revised GFW Live?
Well, we certainly have other, you know, I don't know. We, you know, I'm aware of Microsoft's other plans, but, right, you know, we'd love to be the poster child if they want to make us the poster child. So,
because it was like, you know, Gears of War was going to, well, kind of, I don't know. I mean, it's got a weird history. Shadowrun and Halo were going to, but then Gears of War was like, well, no, here's a bunch of ports so far. But this is like, I think, the first really, truly high-profile PC-only game.
Yeah, I think, it's probably the first PC-only Xbox Live, you know, Games for Windows Live game.
Windows Live, yeah,
right.
Because the other ones were cross-platform or were on both platforms, right? So
maybe if you really succeed well at this and it goes well, then we can get our magazine back.
Maybe, you know.
Yeah, we should be
can pin everything
back
on us. You know, like we're not under enough pressure already. 3 million fans.
Yeah.
Screaming
be
about
all happy and
things like Tyranids and stuff.
Yeah, man, that game's so good and Games for Windows Live so great. Now we want that official magazine back.
Just so I get this right, Vanessa, you were whispering that your time is up, right? Okay.
They have to go.
So Mark has got other obligations. So thanks
so
much.
Oh, he's so important.
Us.
No, I'm sorry. He
go
important.
See Postal. Thanks for
Mark. Thanks so much.
It's been great being here, guys. I just wanted last thing I wanted to say was we do have an Eldar trailer coming out later today.
That.
It's got some
excellent
gameplay footage, it should be
cool
coming out tonight. So you're gonna get to see the Wraith Lord doing some you know, blood pinatas on guys. So
okay, so everybody keep your eyes open for that, and
awesome,
we will continue to follow your game as you work on it because we are big fans of Relic and of the Dawn of War series. So thanks for stopping
by. Thanks, guys. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Look forward to talking again.
Want to get into E3? You can't. Like last year, the event is closed to the public. But G4 is your way to get inside this exclusive event with over 17 hours of E3 action. G4 will also bring you unprecedented live commercial-free E3 spotlights on Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. E3 08 Live, week-long coverage July 14th through the 18th, only on G4. Visit g4tv.com/E3 for details.
And we're back! So thanks again to Mark. I think we're actually not going to podcast much longer here because we have to hustle off to the airport. And before that, we each have to write like 20 more previews. So we have to hurry.
Recovered.
But Sean Elliott, you wanted to...
We get to rave and play Doom, though. What, for one last hour?
Oh, yeah, on the plane.
We get home.
You know what? I've already been thinking that my Batman pen light's probably going to be awesome on the Virgin Airlines plane.
Lordy. Oh, shit. You got a whistle, too? Go with it. No, I just wanted to kill the pizza thrower joke yet again.
Yep.
Because that shit isn't played out enough. But it was like, no, because when we were going to dinner the other night, we were talking about Ryan Scott's sort of odd dietary habits.
Limited palate.
Right. We've mentioned it before in the show. He'll eat peanut butter jelly sandwiches. If you go to Chipotle, he'll get a quesadilla, which isn't technically on their menu.
Right.
But he'll
cheese
tell them,
quesadilla.
Wait, he'll tell them to make it. It's just, you know, meat and cheese and nothing else.
I don't think there's
no
meat.
No salsa. There's a story I tell. It's not true, but I tell people that, like, about the time when we convinced him to try Taco Bell mild sauce, and how he had to go to the hospital. But so that's basically his palate. And
he likes Thai food, though.
But with no vegetables or anything in it.
I don't know. I just know that he likes going to the Thai place next to us.
But Sean's right. It's just like chicken and rice.
Yeah, he'll get something with no vegetables or anything, or spice or anything. So it's like, isn't it? It's not Thai anymore.
Well, yeah, it just becomes rice and like a meat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the easiest way, instead of taking all the time that it took us to just basically describe his palate, it can really, the rule of thumb, when you're going to have food and Ryan Scott's with you and you're trying to figure out, can we go here? Instead of having any real process of elimination, just ask yourself, would the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles use this as ammunition? And if the answer is no, then the answer is no for the food. And that's it.
I think that holds up.
Yeah.
I brought it back, see?
Yeah, no. But also the theory. I think if I go through the food groups,
oh, it does.
You're right.
Yeah, if they wouldn't shoot that shit at whatever Rocksteady and Bebop, he's not eating it.
He won't eat it. Yep. All right, that might be it for GFW.
I don't know what to say to that.
Got anything else, Scooter?
No.
All right. Are we done?
That's it.
Pizza throws.
Next week, we'll be back.
Ryan's not really fired, by the way. Since people never understand anything on the internet, I'm just going to say it. I don't want them to be a gaffe thread or whatever.
Oh, and we were just joking, too, about some of the stuff we said on our last podcast. We should clarify that because we've been like...
Oh, yeah. What do we need to apologize for?
We've basically been the dogs who... We're sitting in a living room full of, you know, upholstery stuffing and just shredded paper and all this stuff and waiting for the master to come home and see what we've done. But we've just been joking, though. When we were telling people just to click anything on the site, we want you to click on the site. But we want you to read it. We want you to click on it because you can't wait to read it. That's what we really meant.
Right. We do. We want you to read the articles that we wrote and not in a cynical way.
No.
We're proud of what we do at 1UP.com.
And on that, we'll see you again next week.
We'll be back.
This 1UP podcast is brought to you by G4, your way to get inside the year's biggest gaming event. G4 will be on the convention floor live every day with exclusive hands-on demos of over 30 of the biggest new gaming titles. E3 08 Live, week-long coverage July 14th through the 18th, only on G4. Visit g4tv.com/E3 for details.